69 enemy planes were shot down by the Japanese air forces operating over Sumatra, Java, and Burma. 39 enemy planes were shot down by the Japanese air forces operating over Sumatra, Java, and Burma. The Imperial headquarters announced at noon Monday. On Saturday and Sunday, Japanese flying squadrons bombed the Baitenzo, Karijati, and Bandung Air Base in Java, and the Tonggu, and Bafang airfields in Burma, shooting down 39 American, British, and Dutch machines. One Japanese plane is still missing, while one was damaged, the Imperial headquarters added. And now we'll continue with your regular news bulletin.
Japanese forces have succeeded in landing in Bali Island,
east of Java, according to an announcement made by the Imperial headquarters at 4:10 o'clock this Monday afternoon. The communique declares that the Japanese Army and Naval forces, maintaining close cooperation with each other, succeeded in landing on Bali Island and on February the 19th, occupied Den Pasa, strategically important point in the southern part of the island. As was announced by the Imperial Japanese headquarters in Tokyo this Monday afternoon, Japanese Army and Naval forces have succeeded in landing on Bali Island, east of Java, on February the 19th. This Bali Island is the enemy's important base, which connects Australia and Netherlands East Indies. The Japanese forces clinched their iron grip on this island, dealing a catastrophic blow upon the enemy, causing Australia into complete isolation. 39 enemy planes were shot down by the Japanese air forces, operating over Sumatra, Java, and Burma. The Imperial headquarters of Dutch communications between Java and Sumatra was achieved on Saturday by Japanese forces, when Japanese units, which advanced southward from Palembang, occupied Tanjung Karang, an important railway point near Teluk Betong on Lampung Bay. From an undisclosed war base, squadrons of Japanese Army Air Corps again conducted severe air raids on Dutch airfields at Batavia and Breitensdorf shortly after noon Sunday. Besides destroying enemy military facilities in and around the Ops airfield, the Japanese flyers set fire to four large planes at the Baitenzorg airfield and destroyed two of them. No enemy planes were sighted at Batavia airfield. From an undisclosed base, large formations of Japanese army bombers in their fourth raid on Java Island shortly after noon Saturday carried out surprise attacks against Karijati airfield and the airfield of Bandung in western Java, raining bombs on 17 large type and 6 small enemy planes underground, of which 7 aircraft were set ablaze. The Japanese bombers also set fire on warehouses and barracks. Meanwhile, Japanese fighter planes, which accompanied the bombers over Bandung, engaged 14 Kurdish P-43 type fighters in fierce aerial encounters, but were unable to ascertain the losses suffered by the enemy owing to heavy crowds. Another unit of Japanese planes on the same day shot down a Brenham-type plane over the seacoast east of Tanjung Karang at the southern end of Sumatra Island. You are listening to Radio Tokyo from Amsterdam. The combined forces of Britain and the Dutch East Indies have started withdrawal from Sumatra, reports an Avis dispatch from Batavia on Saturday. Meanwhile, another Batavia dispatch revealed that the Japanese radar attack over Banyuwangi on the eastern tip of Java Island was terrific, adding that the Japanese are now ready to penetrate into Java. From a Japanese base, the Dili airfield on Timor Island was occupied on Friday by the Japanese forces, which landed near Dili, the capital of Timor Island. Crushing the stubborn resistance put up by the joint forces of Australia and Dutch East Indies, other Japanese forces are expanding their activities around Kupang, Timor Island. The strategic value of Timor Island in the current Pacific War is very great. If a circle with a similar diameter, 1,000 kilometers,
along 1,000 kilometers long, is drawn with Timor as its center.
Fort Darwin, Ampon, Surabaya, and Makassar come within this limit. Thus, Timor forms a very important center of Pacific bases, particularly after the fall of Singapore.
On December the 27th last year, violating the neutrality of Portugal, the British-Dutch forces invade Timor Island, and ever since, the island played the role of a strategic base of military operations for the enemy forces. Therefore, viewed from every angle, it is a just order that Timor Island, the enemy's base of operations, witness the daring landing operations of the Japanese forces. The Japanese landing operations, following the fall of Singapore, on this base of land operations, occupied by the British-Dutch forces, is a very timely measure, observers in neutral countries opinionate. From Shonan Naval Harbor, closely following the minesweeping of the Singapore Strait, the Japanese fleet majestically entered Kippol Naval Port at 6 o'clock Saturday afternoon. The operations of minesweeping were continued on Sunday, and the Japanese minesweepers advanced through the waters near Changi Fortification by the same evening. Senator Naval Port, Shonan Island, the minesweeping of the Malacca Strait has been formally started by the Japanese minesweeping corps at dawn Saturday. From the war front on Bataan Peninsula, an enemy gunboat was driven back when the boat tried to slip out of Manila. A field dispatch reported on Sunday, adding that enemy supply lines are now completely intercepted by the Japanese. Commenting on the far-reaching effects of the fall of Singapore, spokesman of the Board of Information, Tomoko Lohori, on Monday, the foreign press correspondent pointed out the pitiful plight of those countries which had depended on Anglo-American aid. Quoting an article of Captain Ackworth of the British Navy as appearing in Daily Mail of February 10th, the spokesman said it is enough to open the eyes of those who have been dazzled by the huge figures of the mammoth armament program made public by the American and British authorities. For Captain Ackworth says, when all bases in the Pacific are lost, the question becomes no longer of number of ships between Axis and Allies. However strong a navy may be, it is on its perils with its bases when its bases are lost. The only remaining naval bases are Plymouth for the British and Hawaii for the American Navy. Turning to Australia, the spokesman said, the astonishment and confusion of the Australian authorities are beyond imagination. Although we have in the past repeatedly warned the Australian people that the so-called British and American aid were destined to end in an unhonored check and had advised them to reconsider their attitude, they showed no signs of response, thereby creating disaster by themselves. If Australia expects aid from British, she's making a fatal mistake, Mr. Hori continued. For as Premier Churchill stated several weeks ago in Parliament, Britain was fully occupied, and that if Australia wishes to withdraw her army, she might do so. Such is the reward given by the British government to the Australian army, who fought bravely for the sake of Britain, always fighting at the foremost front in the Libyan, Near East, and Malayan front. Thus, it may be easily imagined what kind of further reward will be given India, Burma, Dutch East Indies, and the Chiang Kai-shek government, who are induced to fight against Japan by Britishers. So concluded the spokesman of the Board of Information. You are listening to Radio Tokyo. The attempt of the United States Navy to launch counter-offensive against Japan has again miserably failed. It has been disclosed that the United States fleet, consisting of an aircraft carrier, which has been cruising westward in order to attack the Japanese South Seas Islands, was subjected to severe battering by the Japanese Air Force on February the 20th and had to retreat eastward after having been inflicted heavy damage. This is not the first failure of the enemy counteroffensive, for enemy's attempts to attack the Japanese territory were nullified when the United States carrier Lexington was torpedoed and sunk by the Japanese submarine, and another U.S. fleet, which attempted to attack the Marshall Islands, were driven back after suffering heavy losses. These facts clearly show that Roosevelt's attempts to deceive the world by the so-called counteroffensive have been miserably crushed by the Japanese forces, without even the slightest attempt to show the existence of the U.S. Navy in the Pacific. If the United States Navy continues such an attempt in the future, It will only serve for Japan to show Japanese
Navy's real power for defeating the American Navy whenever it tries to make such counteroffensive.
From Canton, a United Press report from Chungking revealed that Chungking regime
now stands on the point of destruction as the Japanese pressure on Burma is increasing.
The United Press dispatch, quoting Chinese travelers just returned from Burma, indicated that the stream of materials toward Chungking have completely ceased. The dispatch also added that with the stoppage of the flow of materials into Chungking, there are signs of extreme discouragement and uneasiness among the Chungking leaders. From Hong Kong, badly needed American aid to the Chiang Kai-shek regime will exist in name only in the opinion of Chungking political quarters. It was reported here from Chungking Monday. The report said that no agreement of views was reached on the method of getting American aid to the Chungking regime when T.B. Soong, Chungking's foreign minister and formerly General Chiang Kai-shek's special envoy to the United States, conferred in Washington with Secretary of State Cordell Hull on February the 19th. The Chungking regime, the report said, proposed that military supplies be transported to Chungking by way of India, Tibet, and Sichuan, while the United States hold the view that these goods can best be sent by way of Iran, the Soviet Union, and Sikkim. Chungking political quarters contend that it would be impossible to expect the Soviet Union to afford traffic facilities over the route proposed by the United States, because the Soviet Union itself is busily engaged in importing its own military supplies along the same route. Pointing out the long distance of Iran-Soviet route, the same Chungking quarters assert that the traffic along the route, if realized, could not meet urgent Chinese needs. Warfront in Burma. People in South Burma, which is under Japanese occupation, is showing the desire of active cooperation with the Japanese forces, understanding the real aim of the entry of the Japanese into Burma. They have already begun their activities in maintaining order and in securing food supplies. Taiyuan, North China. Powerful Japanese mopping up operations against the Chinese communist troops in Shanxi province are progressing according to plan. With a series of fierce Japanese campaigns, the Chinese Reds are now completely enveloped and are simply waiting for the last day. At Kulang Sien, in the northwestern sector of the Shanxi province, the Chinese communist soldiers belonging to the newly organized 1st Division were virtually annihilated, while on the southeastern front, the main body of the 129th Division was severely battered. From Canton, with the fall of Singapore as a turning point, Chungking papers have begun to express extremely pessimistic views toward the future of the war. The Central Daily News, journalistic mouthpiece of the Chungking regime, in its recent issue stated that the fall of Singapore has given an invulnerable position to Japan and at the same time enabled the German fleet to become active. Indeed, Japan's occupation of Singapore has made the Axis victory decisive, the Chungking paper stated. From Shonan, within a week after the complete occupation of Singapore, the restoration and construction works of leading cities in Malaya, such as Shonan, Sinan, Taiping, Ipoh, and Kuala Lumpur, are now well underway. Significance is attached to the new move of the 7 million Chinese residents in the South Seas, which have now clarified their attitude to sever their relations with the Chungking regime. Meanwhile, the economic development of Malaya, Borneo, and Sumatra, such as development of rubber, tin, iron, and oil, is expected to make steady progress in the very near future. The Asahi and the Nichi, both leading newspapers in Tokyo, on Monday, editorially discussed the effects of the Greater East Asia War on India, stressing that Japan will extend every possible assistance to the Indian people in the latter's fight for independence from British imperialistic domination. The Asahi especially pointed out that Britain has maintained its stronghold in India by constantly stirring religious dissension between the Hindus and Muslims, adding that despite every British pressure, the movement for Indian independence is growing steadily. From Hong Kong, now is the time for India to realize its age-long desire for independence, declared Mr. Daisuke Takaoka, member of the House of Representatives, writing in a recent issue of the Seikai Shukan, or World Weekly. Mr. Takaoka pointed out that Japan's war for liberation in East Asia,
afford the best possible opportunity for India to free itself from the shackles of British imperialism once and for all. The author, who is an authority on India, said, "Although India has a long and glorious history, culture and religion, as well as an extensive and fertile soil, it has been suffering from extreme poverty because of a millstone hung around its neck by British imperialism." He declared, "If India continues to remain ensnared by the British, it will mean disaster for India, and it bodes ill for entire Asia. Consequently, India and its people must collaborate with the rest of Asia," he added. Once freed from the hypnotic influence of the Anglo-Saxons, which is the only obstacle to Indian independence, India will achieve its freedom in short order, the writer predicted. Commenting on the attitude of certain Indian leaders who have pledged themselves to join Britain in the war to overthrow Nazism, Mr. Tucker has pointed out that these Indians are laboring under a misapprehension that all wars are fought for imperialistic purposes, thereby losing their power of judgment to distinguish a war of justice from a war of injustice. India has been paralyzed by the British policy of divide and rule, the writer declared, adding, "Now that Japan has appealed to arms against the United States and Britain, India should realize that the true intention of Japan is to liberate all Asiatics fitted to Anglo-Saxon imperialism and take positive steps to attain India's independence." From Bangkok, "In order to further strengthen the cooperation between Japan and Thailand in political, economic, as well as cultural fields, Mr. Teiji Tsubakami, Japanese ambassador to Thailand, will shortly return home and make important conferences with government leaders in Tokyo. With the progress of the present war, the mutual collaboration between Japan and Thailand is expected to be further promoted in the near future." From Hanoi, "Now that the final agreement for the economic cooperation is expected to be reached shortly between Japan and French Indochina, Mr. Kenichi Yoshizawa, Japanese special envoy to French Indochina, is scheduled to come home within a day or two in order to confer with the Tokyo government. Ambassador Yoshizawa called on Governor General Vice Admiral John Deku at his official residence on Friday and exchanged views on current questions, including various pending questions between Japan and French Indochina." From Lisbon, "Following initial changes in the British cabinet last Wednesday, it was further announced on Sunday that Sir Edward Craig, former Joint Undersecretary of State for War, is replacing Captain Henry Margeson as Secretary of State for War, while Colonel J.J. Llewellyn, former Parliamentary Secretary of the Ministry of Aircraft Production, has been appointed to succeed Lieutenant Colonel J.T.C. Moore Bannison as Minister of Aircraft Production. Dispatches from London further revealed that Viscount Robert Cranbourne, former Secretary of State for the Dominion, has been appointed as Secretary of State for the Colony. Meanwhile, Mr. Arthur Greenwood, Minister without Portfolio, has been dropped from the British Cabinet. Stockholm, a London report disclosed that the British Admiralty announced on Sunday that the entire complement of the British battleship, Barham, totaling 868 men, perished when the vessel was torpedoed off Sodom in Libya on November 25th last year by a German submarine. And that, ladies and gentlemen, concludes your radio news from Tokyo.
Chiang Kai-shek's farewell message to the Indian people on the eve of his departure from Calcutta. During my 2 week stay in India, the Generalissimo said, "I had the opportunity of discussing very frankly with the highest civil and military authorities, as well as with my Indian friends, questions concerning your goal for both our government and the objectives of our common efforts. I am happy to find that there was full sympathy and general understanding between us. My mission is now drawing to a close. On the eve of my departure, I wish to bid farewell to all my friends in India. The present international situation," the Chinese leader continued to say, "divides the world into two camps, aggression and anti-aggression. All those who are opposed to aggression and are striving for the freedom of their country and mankind should join the anti-aggression camp. There is no middle course and there is no time to wait for development. Now is the crucial moment for the whole future of humanity. The present struggle is one between heaven and slavery, between light and darkness, between good and evil, between civilized existence and aggression. Should the anti-aggression front rule the world, the civilization of the world would suffer a setback for at least 100 years, and there would be no end to human happiness. The general look of our hearts with the Indian and Chinese peoples has given a dramatic support to the principles embedded in the Atlantic struggle and the joint declaration of the 26 United Nations, and allying ourselves with the anti-aggression struggle. To assure the Indian people that the vast majority of world opinion was in full sympathy with India's aspirations for freedom, and also expressed our hope and belief that freedom did not hope for any demand on the part of the people of India would have speedily and possibly give them real political power, so that they would be in a position further to develop their cultural and material strength. The General Tomorrow also sent a message of solicitation to Monsieur Stalin on the occasion of the 24th anniversary of the founding of the Red Army. He paid glowing tribute to the Red Army, which he said has shown an impossible spirit in resisting anti-aggression in Europe under the command of OSU. The General Listener expressed his confidence that the Chinese and Russian armies, from spiritual affinity to ethnic collaboration in action, will ultimately accomplish their sacred mission in restoring world peace. Miss Eve Curie, daughter of the famous Louis Pierre and Marie Curie, co-discoverers of radium, arrived in Sulacio by plane this morning. Miss Curie will remain in China for some time, as correspondent for the New York Herald Tribune and leading correspondent for the Columbia Broadcasting System. You are listening to the news from Sherman Tate. The banquet hall of Jowling House was the scene of a most successful dinner given by the Chinese American Institute of Cultural Research in celebration of its third anniversary on the 250th birthday of George Washington. More than 200 guests and members attended the function, which was complete with the cutting of a huge birthday cake and the singing of Auntie Anne's Wedding. The crowded dances were all appropriately decorated with Chinese and American flags, and the whole atmosphere was polluted with the spirit of Sino-American cordiality. In the absence of Dr. H. H. Curry, president of the Institute, who was unable to attend due to indisposition, Mr. Chen Lin-Fu, Minister of Education for Writing, a message from Dr. Kung was sent to the gallery, and Mr. Chen delivered the opening address, which was followed by a message by Ambassador Clarence Bach and Dr. Wang Shijie, Minister of Information. Mr. Fu-Fu Chen, Secretary of the Institute, made a detailed report on its work and its program for the immediate future. The entertainment program was well planned and carefully carried out. Among the prominent guests present were General Wu Jianqing, Ambassador Clarence Wang, Dr. Wang Shijie, Dr. Arthur Young, Dr. T.S. Zhang, Mayor T.T. Wu, Dr. T.S. Chu, the Vice Minister of Foreign Affairs, Mr. Arthur Yu, and Mr. Y.T. Zhu, Vice Minister of Finance, members of the United States Embassy and the Military Mission. We don't have time tonight to read all the messages given, although they were extremely interesting, and therefore we will read only Dr. Kung's message, which was first heard and written and read by Mr. Arthur Young. Mr. Young is advisor in the Ministry of Finance and is vice president of the Cultural Institute. China and the United States have Dr. Kung's message, and now taking side by side for preservation of their national life. They have in common far more than the fact of being allies. Peoples of both countries are democratic and peace-loving. They cherish no design to seize the territory of others or assert their will upon them. The culture of both peoples is wholly alien to the aggression which they together are resisting. Collaboration between our two countries is slowly becoming closer. China's interest in many manifestations of American aid, and now is particularly grateful for the loan of $500 million United States dollars. This world has confidence for what lies ahead. The food with which Ripple was granted shall kill the firm resolution of the American government and people to sustain China in every possible way. Our collaboration will lead to victory, but also it must contribute to a settlement of world and Pacific affairs. What prevents this war, like the last, from being nearly the former to other and greater worlds. Otherwise, the purpose of each peace-loving nation for free national development and progress, along with other peace-loving nations, will be overwhelmed in general hope of more and more terrible weapons. We must make certain that such wars will not happen again. China and the United States, on the shores of the Takatans opposite across the Pacific, with common aims, must work closely together, not only for victory, but in building for the future a culture of common security and prosperity. Our two nations, like George Washington, whose birthday we celebrate today, must live together, not only in war, but also in peace. In the last analysis, fast mutual understanding of peoples is the surest foundation for the future. In delivering such an understanding, friend Dr. H.H. Kong, the Chinese American Institute of Cultural Relations can and will play its part. Entering news from Jinping. Major General Carl Spence, commander of the United States Army Air Combat Forces, said on Saturday that the United States intends to win unquestioned aerial supremacy on all parts and wage devastating warfare. General Spence made this statement in a war message to the Air Forces. This message was carried from Washington to Chongqing by the Central News Agency. He said the war thus far has proved conclusively that aerial power is essential to success, either a defensive or weapon production. Declaration of war by the United States Congress on December 8th was a ringing warning to the world that our armed air forces, in cooperation with our great aircraft industry, would strive for aerial supremacy in every theater of operations, General Scott declared. Our commander-in-chief promised that no matter where the enemy was found, devastating warfare, particularly in the air, would be brought to him. We of the Army Air Forces are determined to attain this objective. We shall attain it. Japanese original staff that our vital defenses, including your numbers, have convinced every real American that we must go into the air with sufficient strength to destroy the enemy. No offensive or defensive action in this war has been executed successfully without air superiority. The superman described successful operation of American planes in many places. Macassar Strait, the Philippines, and Hervé as examples of the superior quality of American planes. He heard the exploits of the American volunteer troops in the Chinese Air Force and concluded, we have just begun. Much remains to be done. Hard work is the answer to successful aerial warfare. The entire Army Air Forces must operate as a whole, smoothly and efficiently, with our minds, our hearts, and our hands. The general in Washington mentioned the AFG. Here's a naked story from Kunmi by our observer on something which the flying fighters have been doing. Taken off from their base in Rangoon, a squadron of AVG fighters flew over the Bolivia River front at 4 p.m. Saturday and subjected Japanese concentrations there to a terrific shooting. Any casualties were reported very heavy. While machine gunning the enemy ground forces, the radio missiles came into headlong flash with certain Japanese pursuit. In a 10-minute ferocious gunfight which ensued, the Americans had 12 Japanese planes shipped into the country. All AVG planes returned safely to their base. According to an AVG spokesman in Kunming, the American volunteer pilots will remain in Rangoon and fight to the last minute. You are listening to the news from Catherine King, commenting on the 24th anniversary of the founding of the Red Army in the Soviet Union. The official hint of daily news, a tribute to the achievements of the Soviet Army through its morale and discipline, and factors equally as important as equipment. The Soviet forces have been able to turn to naught the German dream of occupying Moscow within 3 months, and to inflict crushing blows on the natural, simply because they are a well-principled and well-disciplined army. In their position, they have many goals to fight for, and this firm belief in justice against bullets and race against race has held them together and kept them from retreating. In addition, the three five-year plans in the USSR have done much in the way of providing military equipment. What is true with the Red Army has been true with the past too. We have been able to fool the Japanese for the past 4.5 years. In the battles of Shanghai, Shizhou, Wuhan, and Northern Hunan, the Chinese Army has displayed a spirit which can never be conquered. The Chinese Army cannot be defeated now, the way it may have publicly, because it represents the solid and complete body of the soul of China. In the world's anti-capitalist war, the invincibility and inviolability of the Chinese Army and the Red Army constitute a determining factor for final victory, thus declared the Central Daily News today. The War Department in Washington, according to the Central News, has released the Toronto Dispatch from General MacArthur. Filipino morale and health remain undaunted. The enemy against the Japanese invader is growing in intensity every day. The Filipinos take advantage of every opportunity to show their contempt for the Japanese aggressor. The informers mysteriously disappear. Only a few days ago, the Japanese military awoke one morning to find their proclamation posters enumerating crimes punishable by death, and which were profusely displayed all over the news, also by restricted society. One of the first acts of the Japanese commander when Japanese forces occupied the Manila city was to issue a proclamation warning the Filipinos not to harm any Japanese citizens. This proclamation was printed on posters and displayed in all public places of the city. It was recently found that these posters were modified somewhat. Many citizens have substituted the word Filipino for Japanese, and vice versa. The original proclamation, which read, "For every Japanese soldier killed, 10 Filipino soldiers will be shot," the altered posters read, "For every Filipino killed, 10 Japanese soldiers will be shot." And the latest news from the Bataan fighting was that the Japanese have once more been forced to remit their attacks. General MacArthur is still holding strong. This concerns the news from Chen Xing, Station XQOY, and Kennedy Comrade in the North American transmission, with news in Cantonese.